Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Awesome.
Oh, dude, that's awesome.
That's
awesome.
Really awesome.
Awesome.
That's, so
that's awesome. Oh, awesome.
That's
awesome.
With Stephen Bradford.
Stevie B! What's up, dude?
Bradford, what is going on, brother?
Just another day in paradise, man.
It is. It is paradise in my closet right now because that's where I'm doing this from. And quarantine in the closet. My wife likes that too.
So. Dude, I get this. So I have my ring light now in front of my computer, and I'm trying to convince my wife to use it on her online classes for her high school because they already think she's cool. But she's got a ring light, like she's going to be like an Instagram star.
I thought you got surgery or something because you're looking really good.
I appreciate that, baby. Appreciate that. Speaking of good-looking guys, we got one with us. You guys might know him from his early days on Passions or his current time on Days.
That's right.
I met him on a boat.
You met him on the cruise?
I met him on a boat.
Oh.
Yeah, we had some good times on boats.
Yeah, there's not going to be any boats anytime soon, buddy.
No.
So that's why we got him on the podcast now.
We got Galen Gehring here. Hey, man.
Galen, what's going on, brother?
Hey, what is up, people? Wow. You're like the first people I've seen in months.
Lucky you. Live.
We'll take it.
I mean, for you to get Steve Burton as one of the first people you see in months, I mean, that's pretty good.
Unreal.
And you look amazing. What's going on over there?
Yeah, it's the ring light, dude. It fixes everything. Like,
wow. One of those?
Yeah. See if you, but then you do that.
No, one. I don't see those because I don't even see them.
Those are amazing. It's amazing.
You, appreciate you.
It's good to see you guys. Thank
yeah, you too, man.
How's it going? Look, I mean, comparatively, it could be a hell of a lot worse.
Sure.
Certainly an interesting social experiment right now with the fam. I got two teenage boys, 11 and 13, and it's good. I mean, I think we'll certainly look back on these times in spite of what they are with regards to the pandemic and, you know, this like terrible situation we're in as a country, but as a family, as long as everyone stays healthy, I think we'll be better for it.
Yeah.
That makes sense. You
know? With teenagers who,
yes.
I mean, I always hear, I have two little girls. So when I'm always told that when they're teenagers, they're going to want nothing to do with me. So for teenagers that maybe have those instincts of like, hey, it's my time to kind of get out in the world a little bit or, you know, push boundaries when they can't do any of that stuff. How does that affect the home? You know, what was the transition like and how is it affecting like the without getting too personal, obviously, but like, how has that affected the dynamic at home?
No, I mean, obviously we're here to get personal, right? What's the point?
Yeah, right.
I will say this, they will want something to do with you if you can offer them something, right? So it's very...
Do you mean like food and money or love and affection too?
Well, it depends what you can lord over them.
Sure.
In my case, it's the video games, the media, which they so desperately crave and want.
Right.
So how we – actually, let me shut the door before they hear too much of this. You know.
We're gonna get some tips right now on how to wrangle teenagers.
I love
They're going to start hiding my shit. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
no
exactly.
One's right. So basically, we're just trying to – actually, we took it away today, at least for a certain amount of time, and we try and be consistent. That's obviously key.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it's just amazing. Like, my wife and I, we get along great. And so we seem to very – fortunately, like, peacefully coexist. But the two brothers, they're just – they battle all the time. So we're just trying to get them to be a little more harmoniously engaged, if you will. And so
–
you know, leveraging the video games seems to work pretty well. They both are doing their schoolwork, which is great. And, but in all fairness, like they are way better than I was as a kid. Holy mackerel. I mean, I was a nightmare.
Well, let's get into that. Where are you from, Galen?
Yeah. That was a perfect door opening for us. Thank you, Galen.
I'm losing you guys connection here. I'm not.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
No, well, I mean, listen, I grew up look, it was a different time, right?
Sure.
And so, and my parents were artists, and they were both, you know, my mom was drinking like crazy, and just like there were really no rules.
Where are you from? Like, was
just in L.A. Is okay, a little place called Mount Washington.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I know right. Mount Washington is. Yeah. Silver Lake and over there,
a little exactly. Bit,
Eagle Rock-ish.
Yeah, that's where I went to high school, Eagle mm-hmm. Rock High.
Okay, so growing up in L.A., were you your parents were artists? Were they like in the entertainment business, artists, or like visual artists, or
fine artists? My mom was a fine artist, and my dad did sculpture, and they had a plant shop. Not sure what kind of plants they had in there. If you know what I'm saying?
Sure. So you had some hippie parents.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, cool.
100%. Wow. Yeah,
right on.
And it was great. We just didn't have a lot of rules. And I think that not necessarily, like maybe sometimes there's too many rules and too many things to do. And so we were on that opposite end of the spectrum where it was like, we could kind of do whatever we wanted. And then ultimately, as you get into your teens, I think if you have fewer boundaries, then you can kind of go off the rails a little bit. And so with that said, you know, certainly I was, and then my parents had split up when I was at like, you know, 10, 11, 12, these like crazy years when you're yeah. changing as a sure. human.
Yeah.
And so all that stuff's kind of thrown into upheaval. So there was a lot of angst and experimentation and broken windows, not necessarily intentionally. It's just like, you know, God, if I'd have had a computer or something then, like I probably could have stayed out of a lot of trouble. But
or you can find some trouble on computers, let's be real.
Well,
I mean, teenage boys can find trouble on computers.
Sure.
That but is true.
Galen, was there anything that you kind of grabbed onto? Was there anything growing up, like sports or anything that kind of kept you out of a little bit of trouble?
The problem was there was so much inconsistency in my life with regards yeah. to getting to school or being able to get to school that it kind of negated sports in large part because so much of sports is driven by consistency and being there for your sure. team and vice versa, right? So and also like those things cost money, and that was a point in time when we really didn't have much of that. So
yeah.
anyway, so, I made it. Right? Yeah, so,
hey, we can't there. Wait, there's a lot of years in between. We can't go right to the end. we can't go to I made
so,
it.
So how were you
here know, I am.
Are you do you have any siblings or are you an only child?
I do. I have a sister. She's older. So
yeah.
She's so basically how did you the same we're like 20 months.
Oh wow. So it sounds like there was some chaos in your house, and what did you guys do to either deflect that or like what, you know, what were you, do you remember what you were interested in besides wreaking havoc?
Well, certainly I understand like having two boys and understanding the sibling rivalry and all that stuff. You guys, obviously you have brothers and sisters, right? But my wife, she's like, what the hell is going on? Like she cannot relate to that because she was an only child. So I think sure. that at times, you know, that she's just like, wow, these guys really. And by the way, they do get along a lot. It's just sure. Anyway, when you have really no escape because you're in the house all the time and you yeah. can't have friends over and all that, you know, right. it obviously it's good. I mean, I think it's good. I like I said, I think that ultimately like their relationship will be better for it too.
Sure.
Yeah, for so, sure.
I mean, look, I didn't grow up with a brother or sister, but I have a 16-year-old, a 14-year-old, and a 5-year-old. So, you know, it's the same. They're always going to fight.
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to fight.
Right.
They're going to fight. It's just right. how it goes. Right. No matter how great yeah. they are, they're going to fight. And especially now. especially in
especially
this
time. Especially now, right?
Yeah, totally.
And I think, you know, the healthy side of that, too, is like that's also preparing them for when they're out of the house and how 100%. They're dealing with situations that they're going to deal with in life. So,
yeah.
So I try and look at all of that and obviously do the best we can, right?
Yeah. So I was reading a little bit. When you got out, was it you got out of high school? Did you go to New York City?
Yes. Went to New York City my junior year.
High school?
Summer junior year of high school. Yeah.
How did that come about?
So what happened was a buddy of mine went to get a haircut and
that's awesome. That's dude, how I went to New York. My buddy got a haircut. I was
that's gone. Amazing. No,
this is in LA, and this comes like crazy full circle, by the way, like 20 years later. But so we went to get a haircut at this salon, and he was like, hey, do you want to go? And I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. So I went with him, and then there the guy who owned the salon, who was like a big celebrity hairstylist at the time, was like, I want to use you in an ad. And I was like, great. So next thing I know, like I did this ad, so I get free haircuts. So I did this ad and then ended up dating this girl who worked in the salon. And then this one guy who was cutting hair ended up becoming a manager. And he was like, became my manager. He just was like, I don't want to cut hair anymore. And so he started this management company. And so, you know, the first thing that had happened was once I had done that ad, that was just in the LA Weekly, that then there was like, I got this Bugle Boy job.
Love Bugle Boy.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. Sure.
Like full acid wash.
Yeah, dude. That's what I lived in. What are you talking about?
Oh, man.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah,
so then I was like suddenly like experiencing some stability in my life because I was able to like make a little bit of money and travel a little bit and stuff. So that's basically how the New York thing came about. So some agency in New York was like, hey, come to New York. You can make a ton of money and boom. And I was like, I'm there. Promise. And what it was like were two totally different things, but that's a whole other story.
So you were still in high school. What did your family think of that? How did that work?
Yeah, they were like, okay, cool, have fun, be safe, whatever.
Awesome. Fun. Okay. Up until that point, you had no inkling about being in modeling or acting or like, did you feel the entertainment industry growing up? Like, was that something that was like, did you feel any pull towards that? Or was it just like, I live in LA and I do this and that stuff's over there? Or
it's just like over that junior year after having done that shoot, and that, you know, then you're suddenly gaining a massive amount of exposure or sort of working in LA.
Yeah.
And it was great because this guy, Grady, who is the one who started this agency, like he let me use his car. So now also I had access to a car because the car that I'd given my mom some money for a car, but then it broke down and then it just like sat in the driveway. So I didn't have a car. So now suddenly I had this like new Honda. And life is good. So then this agency in New York was like, hey, come to New York and we'll give you a monthly allowance and we'll give you an apartment. So you really have nothing to lose. I was like, all right, great. You know, so I went. And then it wasn't until basically like the end of that summer that I actually started working a lot. And so because of the fact that I was in advanced placement classes in high school, I was able to do a correspondence basically. So my teacher sent me my work. So for like the first 3-4 months of my senior year, I was just in New York doing it on my own. Kind of like kids are now.
Yeah.
Without
yeah.
computers.
What was living in New York like for you? Did you?
Oh man, it was nuts. It was nuts. So, you know, it's so funny how the mind will like create what the vision is. And then obviously there's the reality, right? So you know, this agency is like, you're going to New York, you're going to live in Manhattan. So I end up going there. And also the guy, Grady, the manager who was like setting all this up, had a client in Hawaii. So this guy shows up on my doorstep. So when I go to the apartment, which is like this brownstone, studio brownstone, I mean, it's probably 300, 400 square feet. I mean, it's just a little shit box, you know, and it's right. Like four floor walk
up. You weren't put up with other clients, right? It wasn't like a model house or something like that.
Oh yeah. So there ended up being three of us that lived in this place.
Oh,
and
my
like,
gosh.
There was a little terrace outside that like, if you had company over, you would take your bed and you would like push it out. Or if you just needed to get away, you would like push your bed out onto the terrace and sleep outside, which was like, all the other apartments around basically like face that inner courtyard. So at any given time, like, you know, 50 people could just like look in. It was hilarious.
That's amazing.
You know, we were just wild. It was just, I was 17 years old and it was skateboarding and hanging onto the backs of cabs and, you know, just doing fun, crazy stuff. New York, I think was a bit more, you know, it was before they like cleaned it up. So it was like, you would go to Times Square and it was just like, insanity. It was fun. And then so I came back after like 4 months and ended up graduating high school, graduated with honors, got into like UC Berkeley, UCLA, all these good schools.
Did you make a concerted effort to buckle down and do your work? Were you driving towards something or you just wanted to do a good job? That seems like a turnaround of sorts.
Sure. Well, obviously I'm like truncating a bit of it, but there was a time I went to live with my dad because my parents had split up. So I went to live with my dad between eighth and ninth grade. So those years, he just really taught me how to study and to get, you know, take care of my business and to get good grades. And so despite the fact that I would be like out all hours of the night and partying, like just being a wild man, I always got good grades. Huh. And so, and I feel like to this day, that's one of the things that as a parent, I feel is just really important. Like, you know, figure out how to handle your business. And I think that those lessons, you know, having been on a soap opera ostensibly for 20 years and having, you know, massive amounts of material, that's so important. Like, there's no way I could have survived without that training.
Right.
So that's something I try to impart on my kids.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. So just handle your, get your stuff done. And obviously as actors, you guys know too, like you find out what works for you. And I think in studying, it's the same, right?
Right.
Absolutely. So anyway, just like backing up, I had good grades. So I had, you know, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th. And then that 12th grade year, you know, I was in all these advanced placement classes, like I said. So I think that those teachers, knowing that I was a good student and that I was doing something interesting that no one else was really doing, were like, okay, let's give this kid a shot and see what he can bring back. Now, the lucky thing was in this apartment I lived in, there was a guy, this guy, Chris Charles, who had just graduated from Brown University. Okay.
Yeah.
So this guy's like, he graduates from Brown and now he's like going there to model. And so he was like massively helpful. I'm not saying he did my work for me, but I would be like, oh, like, you know, what are we talking about here in Tale of Two Cities or whatever it was? You know, he would be like, oh, yeah, I know exactly. And so he was awesome.
He was like Cliff Notes.
Totally.
He was your Cliff Notes. That's awesome.
You came back to L.A. after 4 months of being in New York?
Yeah. Yeah, my senior year.
And was that because you wanted to finish school in a certain way or because the work wasn't there? Or
yeah. I mean, I remember being completely like unhinged and nervous about it. Like I never foresaw that, you know, I was going to model for another 10 or 15 years as it were. It was just a vehicle that I could use to get out of where I was. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Right. Yeah. So once I was in New York and had a taste of it and I was like, okay, I'm making some money, but like, this certainly isn't the be all end all. What's next? Okay, I've got to obviously, like, I've only got one chance to graduate high school. Like, I got to do that. Like, I'm not getting my freaking GED, right? So I can go, like, be in a Macy's catalog. Like, what are we doing here?
Right.
So, yeah, so I got on all these schools. I registered at UCLA. And then in between that time, I got what was called a direct booking. So, in other words, like an agent in Milan who I had, like, sent my pictures to and wanted to represent me. I booked this big Italian print campaign that was like $15,000 for this job. And it was shooting in Africa.
Wow.
So again, right. Which was massive money. Like even though the agencies take half, like that was, you know, $7,500. They do. They like take 50%. It's crazy. But I was
50%?
Like, this,
wow.
Yeah.
Never knew.
But you don't pay taxes. I mean, in theory, like,
yeah.
On that. I mean,
plus that's the, I mean, when they're offering you room and board too, that's where that money comes from also, right? Half the time.
Well, no, that's additional. Like you would pay that additionally, you know, like you would go in to get your, it's classic. One of those things where you're like going to get your check and you're like, oh, yeah. And then it's like, then messenger fees, Xerox copies, telephone call. What is happening? You know?
Oh, like, yeah, that's like you're on a record label.
Exactly. 100%. Right. So I registered for housing and everything. UCLA, I got housing. So it was like low income and all that stuff. I get this job in Africa and I think, actually I wanted to go to Berkeley, but Berkeley wouldn't let me defer. And I was like, at least I knew that UCLA would let me defer for a year. So I booked this job and then I end up deferring for a year. And so it's in Africa. I'm like, oh my God. Like, I'm just like, dude, I'm king of the world right now.
Yeah.
I'm like, 18 years old. I just graduated. I just got into, you know, I got those thick envelopes from all the colleges. Like, I'm like, life is good. And now I'm going to Africa to ride on an elephant. Like a giant.
Right. Was that part of the campaign, or did you just assume that you'd get to do that?
So, the separation, as I said before, from what the mind is telling you and then reality was massive. So massive, in fact, that when I thought of Africa, I never thought that I would be going to Tunisia, North Africa.
Sure.
And we had just killed Gaddafi's son, which Libya is like right next to Tunisia.
Right there, yeah.
So they're all like, we're all very pro-Gaddafi and all very, 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 very anti-American. And I almost got killed there. So what ended up happening was the shoot is happening, and it's in this something out of maybe like Indiana Jones, Sahara, kind of deserty, Tunisian Muslim village. And they found out I was American. I was the only American because it was like Italians. I think there was one English kid there. And everyone else was Italian. And so somehow we were shooting and there was already people like around because it's like in an area that's not really like, there aren't really photo shoots there. It's very humble. It wasn't really open for tourism, right?
Cause, sure.
But really cool looking, obviously, yeah. You know, they just like make tea and bake bread in the ground. And there's all these, you know, crafts and pots and everything's kind of like whitewashed and carpets and handmade this and that everywhere. Like a bazaar, basically. Like a
right. And that wasn't set design. That was bazaar. A real place.
It was a real place. Yeah.
Yeah.
And suddenly there's someone asked me and I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm American. And then all of a sudden it was like, what? You're American? We kill America. We shoot America. We kill. And all of a sudden, these people start freaking out and they're banging on stuff. And there's like this crowd that was around us basically starts turning into a very hostile mob. And I'm like, what is happening? I'm terrified. I mean, it's happening so quickly. I don't even really have a chance to be terrified, to be honest with you, at this point. And I remember some kind of, you know, fat guy came up to me and he was like, come. And I was like, wait, what? And he like grabs me and pulls me away from everyone. And our like photo shoot had kind of disbanded at this point because it was like all hell was breaking loose. And I go and I'm running with this guy. I realize this guy's like pulling me and I'm like, okay, like am I being taken to my death here? What?
Right, sure.
And he drags me into a kill'em shop, like a carpet shop where they make rugs basically, and hides me under a pile of rugs for like half an hour. I'm like laying there. Hiding under a pile of rugs.
Waiting to be found and shot.
Yeah, waiting to be killed.
Dude, that's so crazy.
Oh,
so what about the client? What about the photographers? What about the crew? No, remember like, let's cut our losses? He's just a model.
They totally wanted to get rid of me. Like, unreal. When I got back to Italy, they told the agent they weren't paying for me, that I was like a total like disaster for the shoot. And so,
because it was your fault?
King of the world. To now, and when I went back to Italy, by the way, it was on a weekend. And this was like pre-cell phone and all that. And the suitcase I had exploded. And then they had taped it up. And then when I went through customs from Africa to Italy, they untaped it because the zipper was all broken. And then to go through it all. And then they didn't have any tape. So now I'm leaving the airport with this like suitcase that's like won't even be held together. And the guy, Tom, who was this other dude from England, who was this like big model at the time. I remember like when we got into the airport, there was like a huge billboard of him. And he was like, don't worry, I'm going to take you in the taxi. I was going to drop me off at my place and then it's going to take you to your place because I have my address in this planner. So I got this suitcase. It's just like thrown in the trunk of this taxi. Tom takes off, drops me off at my place. It's pouring rain, right? It's like 1 a.m, Italy, pouring rain. Mind you, like, I didn't know Italian then. Like, now I can speak Italian pretty well, almost fluent. I certainly got to the point where I was. I just forgot it. But I get out of the cab, and it's pouring. I just remember it was pouring. It was like one of those, like, the gutters are falling and everything.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The cab guy's, like, pulling out my suitcase, and stuff's just, like, falling everywhere.
Oh,
and just wet. And then he starts yelling, telling me to pay. And I'm like, I know Tom told the guy that he'd already paid. And, like, the Italian cab drivers were, like, notorious for ripping you off. So I get in this huge fight with him, and he's just, like, throwing my shit there and pulls off, you know, like, puddles flying on me. And, like,
suitcase. No.
I'm soaked. And so I start like buzzing on the side of the building to get in to this place called a pensione. But they close at like 10. Like if you're not in at 10, you're out. It's like 1:30 in the morning now, you know, it's pouring rain. And there's no way I'm getting it. So every time I buzz, I'm like waking someone up, whatever, there's all these different buttons and they're all like screaming in Italian. And I'm just like, literally, I'm like almost crying at this point because this whole trip has been a total downer. Now I'm on the side of the street. I'm just like, so luckily I just had the wherewithal to try these like glass doors and they opened and I broke into this building and slept in the stairway. And then the next day I took my Bang Now suitcase and figured out a way to get to this park where I knew that people congregated so that I could call and get a number for the agency. Because the other thing was that prior to this, I actually had gone to London, but I was deported. Okay. So
this story is way better than any soap opera story we're going to hear.
So,
right now.
Yeah.
This
so
is
I went
way
to
better.
London for like a day. I was going to go from London, had a one way ticket. I was going to go from London to Paris. This was like 3 months prior. So I was going to go from London and I was going to take the hydrofoil, whatever, to Paris. But anyway, they didn't believe me. And I did have some modeling pictures, whatever. And so, there, the burden of proof is on you to prove that you're not going to work. It's not the opposite way around. And so they deported me. So the next day, basically, I flew home. So cut to this trip, I made sure that I had, like, nothing that showed I was going to work or, like, had connection with people. And then ultimately, that ended up, like, you know, I was locked out on the street as a result of it. Now, I got in touch with those people, but that sort of explains why I hadn't been in touch with anyone. And also, I'd been in Africa and almost dead. So,
oh my gosh!
Anyway,
man. That's
and
amazing.
I'm guessing model. I'm guessing there's no strong modeling union that protects you in these circumstances.
Yes. Oh no, not to protect us. It just protects the agencies. Yes.
Oh sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. See, I always thought that a fair amount of people that we talk to have had modeling experience and I've never been able to relate to them. And this is maybe one of the first times that I'm like, glad that boat passed me by.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I've got a million of these, like, it's so funny too, because I got one friend who like will be somewhere and I'll like say something, whatever, in a language or some sort of cultural reference that is just a result of having spent so much time in Europe. And he'll be like, oh yeah, because you were a model. And I'm like, so he doesn't know any of these stories. And I have so many of them that were just like insanely torturous. And looking back, like obviously mildly entertaining too. I mean,
well, in character building, I mean,
yeah,
right. Yeah. I certainly prepared you for a life of telling somewhat extraordinary stories in television series.
Correct.
And if anybody has told extraordinary stories, it's Galen.
Right.
On daytime shows, that's for sure.
Today's episode of That's Awesome is brought to you by Lightstream. Friends, it's a weird time right now. And
yes, it is.
I know probably a lot of people are leaning maybe on their credit cards a little bit, right? Because if if your place of work shut down, credit cards is, if there's no money coming in, credit cards are kind of important at a time like this. But then what happens if it gets to be, you know, too much, right?
Or if somebody might even be at that point already, right?
Of course.
So, I mean, there are a lot of people who are, and I've been there, so I get it. And I used to get another credit card to consolidate that credit card with lower
Absolutely.
Interest rate. And it was a cycle that I was in for a long time. And, you know, the great thing about Lightstream is they believe that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience. And that's exactly what they deliver.
You can quickly roll the balances from multiple credit cards. Say you've gone from credit card, which I know I've done at some point. You can take the balances from those credit cards into one single monthly loan payment. And it's a low fixed,
right.
It's a low fixed interest rate. And by doing that, you can free up more money in your monthly budget.
We know what the interest rates are in most credit cards.
Yeah.
They're 15% and above. And it's absolutely crazy.
Well, and then if God forbid you do one late payment, then that shoots up even more.
Yeah, dude, I remember the days where you just pay the minimum payment.
Right. And then that can just build up and build up, and you wonder how you got there. Lightstream's credit card consolidation loans have rates from just 5.95% APR with AutoPay, and there are absolutely no fees.
That's right. You can even get your money as soon as the day you apply, which is amazing.
You can hear us talk about it, but it's always really helpful to hear someone, an actual client, talk about it. So listen to this person. Finding out about Lightstream couldn't have come at a better time. I've been trying to consolidate my debt for a few months now, but I felt like I reached a dead end. I was listening to my podcast one morning and heard their ad. Everything that was said sounded too good to be true, but at that point, I had nothing to lose. Ultimately, it was true. It was so easy, quick, and convenient. I wish I would have found out about Lightstream sooner. I 1,000% recommend to everyone. So, friends, if you find yourself in a situation where credit card debt seems overwhelming, apply today to get a special interest rate discount and save even more.
The only way to get this discount is go to lightstream.com/awesome.
LightStream.com/awesome. Subject to credit approval. Rate includes 0.50% autopay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit LightStream.com/awesome for more information.
So how do we make the transition from modeling to acting? Where'd that come in?
So, you know, to be honest with you, like, I think it was originally always like acting. Not that I wanted to do it, but that's what this manager was like. Oh, you remind me of this old famous actor, Tyrone Power. And, and you know, you could be in a, and again, I was like, I don't know if that was so much, you know, I see people or know people that it's like, they have this insatiable appetite and drive to be actors and acting all the time. And I love it. Don't get me wrong. I certainly, and maybe it's just having had so much exposure in 20 years. Like, it's hard being on a daytime show where you're working. I mean, Passions was exceptionally hard in that regard, that we were there almost every day and worked long hours. It's really not like that now. Obviously, it's the business model has transformed. But, you know, there's a easy and high propensity to burn out.
Sure is.
You know, you just, and the last thing you want to look at is a script, or you're just like, oh my God, let me just decompress, you know? So, so how did I get into it? So I was in New York, and obviously they take a lot of, you know, good looking people from, you know, modeling or whatever, and see if they can act, you know? And,
who is they? Like, how does that
producers,
happen?
Producers, casting directors, you know, right. I mean, I'd done a ton of commercials and stuff like that. So, I had actually, you know, I was in Miami because what had happened was I'd gone after Europe back and forth for a long time and living all over Europe, primarily between Milan and Paris and Munich and Vienna, then back to New York, and then was like, I really need to get back to school. So I got into NYU. So I started at NYU. So
go Torches, go Bobcats, go Flames. That's our mascot.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, I did 4 years there, so I have maybe a little more school spirit. So,
I like it. I like
he was a,
it.
He was a cheerleader, if you couldn't tell.
I was. For the Division II girls basketball team. We're very good.
Oh, my God. I love it.
No, that's not true. Is it true, Bradford?
Yeah.
You weren't a cheerleader.
No. No, but okay.
What school were you at there?
Tisch.
Excellent. So you were like the real arts school.
Yeah. Like were you just at the College of Arts and Sciences or?
Yep. So I would have liked to get in Tisch, but like, what did I have to, you know, at that point in time, they're like, no, you're a little, you got good grades, but what are you submitting? I was like, I got these modeling photos. They're pretty cool.
That's awesome. So what did you think you were going to study though? Or you just wanted to get some education?
I just wanted to get an education, to be honest with you. Okay. Like, I wasn't exactly sure, but, my dad's side of the family, like, they're all college educated. And so I just felt like I'm not going to be the black sheep, you know, I'm going to, you know,
get yourself some education.
And the motto of the thing has been fun, but certainly not like fulfilling on that level. And then ultimately, I think sort of going back to the whole school thing was like, I love to learn.
Great.
Like, that's a bit. I really do. So there was that. And,
So you did a year, you said a year at NYU.
So I did 2 years at NYU. And then at that point in time, I had gone to Miami for some work, and back and forth. There was these Germans that had come in, and they were shooting a ton in Miami Beach before it really became what it is today. It was very rough around the edges and very inexpensive and very scenic, if you framed it the correct way. And not with all the drug dealers and crime and it was intense. Yeah. So, but anyway,
yeah. If you shot it like Miami Vice, it looked great.
Exactly.
Right.
So, so this was 1990. And so I bought a place there. I was living in New York at the time, but I thought, I can afford an apartment here. And I think this just seems really interesting. Like it has a big upside and I've been coming here a lot for work. Now I've got a place, I can write it off, et cetera, or I can rent it out. So I bought a place.
Like register there and save on taxes.
Yeah. Or that too. But I was working so much in New York that wasn't maybe really a case, but at least part of the time, right. Sure. Part of that income. So I met Jenna, who's now my wife, and we started dating. And so ultimately I went from New York and then to Miami. And then a friend knew the dean of the film school in Miami at University of Miami. And cut to next year, I was enrolled in University of Miami studying film, as an actor, studying writing,
as a filmmaker.
Production. Exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So, and then of course the day that I graduate, I walk off the stage and started shooting Passions the next day.
So, how did that happen?
You got cast in Florida for Passions?
Yeah. Yeah. So,
were they looking in Florida or did you fly up to New York?
Yeah, they were looking everywhere. I don't want to say it was an international manhunt, but it was certainly they were doing a nationwide talent search.
For your character specifically?
Yes.
And was Louis? Yeah.
And so to my benefit, they'd pretty much already cast most of my family. And so as you guys know, in production at that point in time, it becomes a much more specific puzzle piece. Okay. Sure. You have to look like the mom and dad and the brothers like this and the sisters like this. And oh, this guy's too big. He's too small. So that really helped me because I certainly was not training as an actor per se at that point in time. Like that wasn't what I wanted to do. I had decided I was going back to school and I worked super hard for those couple years at University of Miami to be a filmmaker. That was really what I was going to do. And so of course I get a job doing something else, right? It's the freaking universe is the most insane thing. Right. So what happened was they were doing castings and stuff in Miami, and my girlfriend at the time, Jenna, her agent was like, "Hey, I think Galen would be really good for this." And she's like, "Well, he's in school and he's really not interested." And so I blew it off. And one of the reasons too was because I was doing these night shoots for my thesis film, and it was just an insane. It was so hard, all that stuff, and the audition was a 10-page monologue. I was like, no, dude, no.
That's a lot of work.
I was like, no. So finally they were like, they really want to see him. And so I went in. I was like, fine, but I'm just going to kind of do my own thing. So I kind of just went in and.
That's amazing.
So I just went in and riffed on it. I did. I really did.
Wow, that is hey, you're going to be able to see me, but I'm going to do whatever I want. Can you imagine you just start a monologue from a play?
Look. So what I did was I took basically what they were saying and then I just made it my own. It's so funny being in a position, especially as an actor, where you really don't want the job.
Yes.
Right.
It's such an attractive look when you walk into a room and you're like, I don't need you guys, but I'm here. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And I'm going to do this thing. Maybe you like it. Maybe you won't. Right. But you're welcome. right?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, because you know everybody else in Florida is like, oh my God, they're coming to, this could change my life. I need to do this. Like, and coming in with desperate, I want. And you come in being like, I don't care.
Yeah. So, but the funny thing was that, like 2-3 days later, they're like, all right, they want to test him out in LA. And I'm like, oh my God. No, I'm in my, this is like my final semester. Now I got to figure out how I'm going to freaking fly to LA and screen test. Now I got to know the words. Now there's like, oh, you're going to test. I got to do a test deal, all this stuff. So I talked to my professors and I'm like, can I miss a few days, whatever. And I had missed a few days anyway, because I was working a lot too. Like I'd had a job in Australia. So I was like, I had some stuff going on, but, I fly out, I do the test, goes fine, fly basically back the next day. I'm like on the plane, like, it's so funny too, because I'm like, you know, when they fly for those things, obviously they fly first class, and I'm like literally like flying first class, but I'm like painfully, like the 5-hour flight, you're just like pouring over all kinds of, you know, college stuff and trying to figure, like, it was just a funny contrast, right? So like, right. Like, wait, what is this like kid doing in first class, and he's doing all his score? It just seemed funny. So that test, I don't hear anything for like another week or 10 days, and I'm like, okay,
not really?
So that's done in your head, right? Like,
I hope. Honestly, yeah. Like, I don't really. Yeah, I was like, fine, whatever, you know. Oh, they want to test him again.
No. No,
so,
come on.
So I got to fly out again now.
Wait, Galen, hold on. Who'd you test with the first time? Was it the mom or the dad, or was it sisters, brothers? You remember?
The first time it wasn't like a chemistry read. So it wasn't, okay. I didn't even test with any of them. I think it was a reader, as I recall.
Okay. Got it.
It might've been, I should ask. I gotta find out, because like it's foggy.
That's all right.
I do remember, however, the second time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was what?
So the second time now. Now I have more invested in it, right? Because I've spent more time thinking about it. Now I know other people who actually have gone from Florida too and are testing. And wouldn't you freaking know it? I get on the airplane and I see this guy, James Hyde. He's on the airplane.
I know James, yeah.
Yeah, and James actually, I had put him in one of my films in Miami, which was so funny. And he'd actually been on, like, I think it was, he'd just got let go from, I think it was Another World or As the World Turns. I'm not sure. I always get those two confused. But he was on that show for like 6 months. It was like a very brief stint, and then he'd got let go. So I remember that sticking in my mind, because I also remember having used him in this film, and he did extraordinary work, actually. He did really interesting stuff for this piece I did that I really was like, wow, which I always used to tease him about, because I was like, what happened, dude? You get on a show, you're terrible, but this film, you were so good in. And he hated me for that, you know.
It's amazing.
But I was right. It was
he's a character actor stuck at a good-looking guy.
No? He did good in this one.
Okay. So, that's amazing.
He's a Buckeye, and as a Hurricane, I never miss an opportunity to bust his balls. So,
hey, well, calm down. Calm down.
Oh, another no.
Buckeye here. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's amazing.
Hey.
You're safe.
I'm safe.
Okay. So, and also, like, he was in Miami for more time than he was in Ohio. So that always was like, dude, anyway.
Yeah.
We had a thing going, but it was all love. So I see him on the plane, and I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm going to test for passions. And I was like, I'm going to test for passions. He's like, what are you talking about? So now I'm like, oh, my boy's going to like maybe be on the show. Then he found out like the next day, because I think he had another deal, so they had to let him know in like 2 days that he had got it. So I go to the test, right, and I'm testing with two people. I'm testing with Mackenzie Westmore, who ended up being Sheridan Crane. So she was like my love interest. Now I'm fine. And then I was testing with another guy called Ben Masters, who's like, you know, a great actor, a tremendous actor. And he just crushed me in the test. And I don't think he meant to do it. He's a very generous guy. He's just such a good actor. And I was just like watching him the whole time. And I'm supposed to really be like taking control of the scene, but I just did not know how to do it. And every time I made a choice, he made a way more interesting choice. And I was like, oh, so I just remember leaving there. And there was an Iglesias who was there. But I thought, oh my God, this guy's an Iglesias. And I'm like coming from Miami too, like, you know, they're like royalty or whatever. So I'm thinking like, there's no way. And it's fine. This is great. And wouldn't you know it, like, I actually, you know what? It was like 2 weeks until they made the decision. And I know why it took them so long, because like there were a lot of people who didn't want to hire me, I think. And there were people who were like, no, we'll wait till these fits and so on. So then I had to fly out again and do a fitting and all that stuff and then fly back. So I literally had to like fly out three times in that final semester, which was brutal.
Yeah.
In fact, they wanted me to stay. I did finish it, but I actually never finished the edit of it that I wanted to do, because I wanted to like do another re-edit of it. So it's in the garage somewhere in a box.
Sure. Come on, we can edit it. Let's go.
Yeah,
I gotta like digitize it all, I think, and like
that'd be amazing,
everything.
Dude.
Yeah, it would be pretty funny.
That'd be cool.
You got some free time.
Yeah, right.
So you got the call? Did you get the call that you got?
So I got the call, and then I had to fly out there and do that fitting and then fly back. And you know, wouldn't you know it, like the day I graduate, I basically like walk off stage and go to the airport and start shooting in Ventura the next day.
Were you excited about it, or were you just kind of like, since you've been pulled so many places in your life and things didn't always go the way you hoped they would, like trips to Africa that resulted in that, or like all these things, you get pulled in so many different directions, but they don't always match up to your expectations. Were you excited about this, or were you just like, here we go again?
Excited. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course. I mean, I think human nature tells us, like, even when we've had those bad experiences, like, we're still going to be excited, because, again, your mind is telling you it's going to be great. And so many people were telling me it was going to be great. And you want to believe that. And I thought, look, I wanted to get back to L.A. anyway, because it's where the business that I want to be in is, as a writer, director, et cetera. So I thought what would happen to me, and the reason I brought up James getting fired off that other show or let go, sorry, not fired, he didn't do anything wrong, just they didn't renew his thing, was he was there 6 months. So I thought, perfect, I'll work for 6 months, and then they're going to fire me or let me go, whatever they're going to do, they were going to fire me. And then I'll be where I want to be, and this is great. This is amazing. So
yeah,
it was like a win-win for me. Didn't matter.
Sure, sure.
And what did Jenna feel? How'd she feel about it?
She was excited for me. It was cool. I mean, it was, you know, and to be honest with you, I remember like, do I turn this down? Do I take this job? Do I let this thing get in the way of my dream, of the thing that I've worked so hard for these last few years? And so I had to wrestle with that, to be honest with you, about whether I was going to take the job. And ultimately I decided, look, again, and I think that part of those expectations, maybe not turning out the way you think they do, was the reason why I had to take it. Because like, what do I have to lose? Like, I've got this opportunity. There was a lot of press for that show.
Yeah, it was huge. Yeah, it was a huge show.
Yeah.
Because it was a new, I don't remember when it premiered. So I know it was NBC, like in... And NBC just had Days at the time. Did they have any other? Oh no, was like Santa Barbara and.
No, I think that was gone by then. Sunset Beach, right?
I don't know. I remember because it was so campy that it was really just like they were selling it much more in a different way, and subsequently, like it was getting a lot of press. I mean, it was, you know, we got things like covers of TV Guide and Always We're in Entertainment Weekly and things like that. That was like, I just don't think that, I mean, certainly I haven't seen this at Days. Like we don't garner that kind of press anymore.
Sure.
So it was really, you know, those things make it exciting.
Of course.
And it was just a new chapter. So that was also exciting. And,
So were you there all what? Nine seasons there?
Yeah, basically.
9 years?
I left for a little while. It was like we had, because I was, it was that point where I was actually like really burnt out, and they were paying me really well, and everything was great. I mean, it was good. I just wasn't sure if, just a lot. I mean, it was, we were there every day. Basically 50 weeks a year. You could really get like 2, maybe 3 weeks vacation a year. And, you know, 12, 14 hour days. It was just long, arduous, tons of dialogue. Yeah. Obviously like insane setups, you know, and dive tanks and stuff dumped on your head and, you know, being tortured by an orangutan that was, you know, pinching the hell out of you and regurgitating in your face constantly, stuff like that, you know.
Oh, man.
Not your normal days.
No.
Work. So, no. But yeah, I was there most of the time. And
how did it feel for you, you know, having been pulled and jumped around and for to have that kind of stability? And did you, and knowing maybe not just job security, but life security, and maybe you started to build some roots with the lady, and like, that must've been an interesting time for you to transition into something that was going to last.
Sure. Sure. I mean, look, I don't think if you interviewed anyone that they would say they thought that show was going to be on for 10 years.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, it really built a following, and honestly, like, I think to a certain degree, like, it could have been on more years, but there were some issues. And then, you know, Jeff Zucker had the Today Show and wanted to add, you know, the fourth hour to make another, you know, $50 million, whatever it was. But, but I was surprised. The point being, like, I was really surprised to see that longevity on the one hand. And to answer your question, definitely was, it was a major contrast to not be traveling as much. I mean, I had been at the university for the last few years, and so I'd really locked that down. The other thing that I didn't even mention too was that after I had bought that place in Miami Beach, I started buying houses and flipping houses there also. So I was,
oh wow,
I was doing all these things concurrently. There are incredible houses that they built there in the 20s through 50s, Spanish architecture, Mediterranean, Art Deco, that had been just basically like left and untouched for where it was on a beach with like really great bones. Like you don't see that. I mean, you certainly don't see that in California,
at least not
in LA.
No.
So it was like, you could actually afford to get in the game and finance a house and flip a house and make money. So I was doing that also. And that was also something that I always loved doing. I mean, still to this day, I love architectural design and landscape design.
I remember seeing in that short-lived reality show your house, and it's beautiful.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's gone.
The house?
Or the... Now, but...
Oh, you are. Okay. Yeah. Anyway. But so that unexpected longevity, when that did finally come to an end, there wasn't much. Did NBC kind of just keep you? Or did you, or was there ever a moment of what's the next job going to be? Or did you know that NBC was going to keep you?
So this, I actually love this story.
Lovely.
Yeah. I mean, I hate it. It's another like story that like, look, the only thing that's like funny about it is the tragedy of it all. Right. So like looking back, it's like, that's what makes it funny is, so I had bought this house in Santa Monica, and we decided that we were going to really just like basically, it was an old 20s Spanish house, and we were basically going to add to it. We're going to have a second story, and just like, we're just going to do it right. It was going to be great. All like imported European tile and hand painted stuff. And just like a friend of mine who I had met was an architect, and he designed this beautiful house. And so we set about building this house. And that was about 2006. And I was living in a house in Hollywood at the time. So several things happened. The market, first of all, everyone was building at that time. The economy was great. And then China was building the Yangtze Dam, which was using this insane amount of concrete. So the price of concrete went up. And so when I had dug the footings of the house and decided I needed to double the amount of concrete, that doubled and then quadrupled my price. And then when they found that there was asbestos in the original house, and then they could only take it off in like 25-pound bags, the whole house, when they took it down. And then my wife got pregnant. And then the show I was on, Passions, canceled. And then the guy fell off my roof and almost died. And then my contractors were embezzling all this money and not paying my subs. And I had like five liens on my house. And they embezzled like $500,000 of money that I had paid them to pay the contractors for me. All this happened, right? It was like all coming, like caving down. And then Passions went off the air. So, and I couldn't get my certificate of occupancy because I couldn't finish building this house, and the market had crashed, and it was just like insanity. And I had to fire the builders. Obviously I ended up suing them, but then they declared bankruptcy. So I was like, it was just like the perfect storm of nightmares.
Gosh. Oh man.
Yeah. So like, I really needed a job, you know, to like, it was insane. So, so Passions canceled, and then I get this call. This is a call from Days, and you know they want me to come in and read, and I was like, all right. But like, you know, my manager was like, well, you know, he was the lead in for your show, you know, on the same network for nearly a decade. Like,
right? You guys probably know his work.
Yeah.
Does he really need to read?
Yeah. Can't we? You just want to, you mean you wanted him to just meet and then like figure out like you're going to offer him the job or no, we wanted to see, you know. And so I remember my manager was like, no, you're not going in, whatever.
Galen doesn't read.
Yeah. You're not going to read. Yeah, exactly. And I was like, dude, I'm reading.
I'll read.
Not, at least, you know, I'm going to give myself the opportunity to go blow it, but I'm not like going to like just, I have to be in control of this situation. This was a moment. This was like a big moment in my life. And, you know, my wife to this point, she's like, I don't know how you did it. Like there was so much pressure knowing everything that was happening in our lives.
A complete reversal from your Passions audition where you're like, I don't need this. You really needed it.
Totally. I was like, and I really needed them to just offer me the job based on what I thought I had done, which was proven myself for 10 years. I mean, ostensibly I was a main part of that show for a decade. No, nothing. All right, cool. Thanks, guys. All right, so I guess I'm coming in. So, so I go in, right? I you know, I get the sides and I go in, and it's probably like a five pager, with some good chunks in it, you know. And I'm just like, all right, I got this, whatever. It's like, no big. And so I go into the studio. I remember the day, and so I was testing with Ali Sweeney, and I go in and everyone's in the studio, and then all of a sudden everyone's just gone. And so they had taken a five, but like how they, I just hadn't noticed. And so then I was just like sitting there and there was no one around. And then I started to get super nervous. I was like freaking out, you know,
like Ashton Kutcher's like, got to come around and be like, punked, there is no job.
Yeah. Like, could have been anything. Or I was just like, I was just alone with my thoughts, you know, and I just, it was like, it was kind of bugging me out. And then I remember looking up on the wall as it was, we were testing in the Demira Mansion, and there was a picture of Joe Mascolo, who's like Stefano, you know, and he's like, it's this kind of like overdone portrait, you know, and he's up there on the wall, you know, his rings and his, hello, you know, and I was like looking at that and I was like, all right, I'm good. I got this. Okay. This is fine. Like I just, it was that picture. I was like, okay, I can do this. You know, it's like, if I can't handle this, then what? So, so we did it and they offered me the job. But funny story, when they offered me the job, I was in my car, which I remember was a Prius at the time. And,
so progressive, ahead of the times. Well done.
Yeah. And I see that, well, cause I was living in Santa Monica and I was having to commute back and forth.
Yeah.
It was kind of, you know, it was a lot of driving. So I was like, all right.
Hybrids make sense. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, so I see Gary Tomlin on the, caller ID comes up and I'm like, oh, I know. So he was the executive producer. I had worked with him. He was a director at, it might not even have come up, but I answer the phone and it's on speakerphone. I remember I was in West Hollywood and I stopped the car, you know, I pulled over cause I was like, oh, I need to know what the heck's going on here. So I pull over and he's like, hey, Galen, it's Gary. I just want to congratulate you on, you're going to be playing the role of Rafael Sanchez. And I was like, oh, my God, it's amazing. Like, Dirty Sanchez? I don't even know why I said that.
Don't Google that, anybody.
Yeah. And he goes, what? And I go, nothing. Nothing. I don't even know. Someone yelled. He goes, no. What, he was a very stern guy, you know.
Like, yeah.
No. What did you say? And I said, Dirty Sanchez? And he goes, what is that? And then, no, I'm not excited. And my mind is just, I'm just like, oh my God, I worked this hard to get this job, to get me out of thing. And now I've just flushed it all down the toilet because I'm saying something so stupid, right? What is wrong with you? Like, you're such an idiot. Like, I can already see Jenna going, you said what? What? Oh my God, you had it. You freaking had it, you idiot. You know?
Oh my God.
So I go, like, Dirty Sanchez, and he goes, he goes, I'll call you right back, and he hangs up.
No!
Doesn't he? So now I'm just sitting there, and it's like, whatever, the phone, you know? And I'm just like, it's one of those, like, crazy, surreal moments where, you know, people are walking by outside the car, and I'm just like, I'm just in utter silence, you know? It's just like, what did I just do?
Just like a cold sweat, like,
oh.
Holy. Like, beyond. So now I'm just sitting there thinking of what I'm going to tell my wife, you know, how I didn't get it, because Gary obviously never called. An eternity's going by. I mean, I feel like the sun came down, went down, and then went up and down, and there's like 22 tickets on my dashboard and the whole thing, you know. But the phone rings again like 5 minutes later. And he goes, all right. You're playing the role of Rafael Hernandez, so I'll see you Monday.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So
listen, and I know because Gary directs at GH now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I know exactly, and he's a straight laced guy, and he's you know, it takes a lot to make him laugh.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? And so getting that call from him,
sure, like, you've got joke to make him laugh, and he just stares into you, and he looks so deep into your soul, and you're like,
oh man.
Yeah.
That's so funny, dude.
He's a rad dude, and he's so he's awesome. You know, he's just,
That was what, 2000, what?
Eight?
Is it eight?
Yeah, like 10 years ago, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Of all people, dude, like I knew Gary. I worked with Gary. I mean, and so he had directed at Passions. In fact, Gary, to his credit, was a huge part. I mean, thank God for Gary in so many ways. He was a huge part at basically restructuring Passions so as to stay on the air. They cut like 40% of the budget overnight and produced the same show.
Yeah.
And he was a huge part of that. And so, you know, he subsequently took that similar structure to Days and formulated it there. So
that's cool.
That's a useful skill. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's
doing more with less.
Not to do that, of all people, to Gary Tomlin. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yes.
It's not funny to him, you know?
No, it's not.
No.
Not a lot is.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, you were there. So you were there for 10 years off and on? Is that?
Where, Days?
Yeah, or straight through?
No, I was, pretty much the whole time.
That's awesome, dude.
Yeah.
That's two great runs. That's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like the door's open for me to go back there. You know, we'll see. Obviously, I don't think anyone could have foreseen the trying times that we have now with regards to work. Holy mackerel. What a trip, right?
Yes.
Yeah. We don't. Nobody knows when we're going back. That's what's crazy.
Yeah.
I haven't figured that out yet. So,
having these two long runs, what – is there anything else in your life that you search for? You know, you're an actor now, so you're a creative person. Is there anything, is it architecture? Is it, what are the other things that you have passion for?
Yeah, definitely.
For lack of a better word.
You know, I certainly would have said it was like, you know, screenwriting, because that's what I want to do. But like, here I am, like, you know, I should have amassed at least 20 good scripts by now, but you know, I have 20 good ideas. You know what I mean?
Right.
Right.
So, but I do love, I mean, certainly the housing, like, you know, renovating, designing the houses has been a big part of that.
That's awesome.
And I do love the filmmaking business. It's just, the thing with the house is, to a certain degree, is like, you're really in control of it. I mean, with writing, you're totally in control of like creating this product, but getting it from the paper to a finished product, like, poof, that's a lot, you know?
Yeah, it is.
But the house is, it's a little more instant. And I think that I really like that. A, I'm good at it, and B, like, in my humble opinion, but B, like, you can do it in a semi-timely fashion. Do you know what I'm saying? And it's been good for me.
So, yeah, that makes sense. There's some, the gratification, the satisfaction of having created something. And yeah, that's, it's so funny. This, for a lot of the people we talk to, you know, a lot of people have different outlets for those kind of things. And and so you can always kind of see the link between whatever it is, if it's, you know, if it's a direct thing like music or whatever, like you could, but seeing it in a hobby, like how's it, like, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, hey, man, it's so great to catch up with you.
Yeah, dude. And thanks so much for taking the time out with us. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And we certainly wish you all the best in this age of quarantine and uncertainty.
And, I mean, I just obviously want to wish you guys all the best, too. And then for everyone out there, I know these are really difficult times. And I know I was just thinking, like, you know, I just heard some quote of someone saying, of course, I'm going to botch the whole quote, but basically, like, these are hard times, and it's okay to feel weird and down and that, like, I think that we just have to give ourselves the freedom to let whatever comes across us in these moments, like, happen, and not judge ourselves too much, you know? Cause I know that, you know, it's certainly, like, I've been feeling weird about all this, you know what I'm saying? So I hope that everyone out there who's watching this too can be to a certain degree at peace and hopefully healthy as well. Cause I know how hard this is.
It's interesting on social media, especially, I think everyone gets used to putting what they think is their best face forward. Like, hey, see how great my life is. This is me.
Yeah.
This is my feet on vacation. This is my, my amazing, whatever that we show the most amazing moments of our life. And now that we're in this time where everyone knows that nothing is amazing. Right.
Right.
So like you can share, everyone can be a little more authentic.
Yeah.
And
that's okay. That's
okay. And feeling what you're feeling is okay too, rather than saying, oh, I'm not sad. I'm great. I'm not nervous about my future. I'm great. Like everyone can kind of be where they are, and it's okay.
Yeah. My friend had a good correlation. He said, you know, with 9/11, everybody felt it, right? Everyone felt 9/11. We all felt that we were unified in the country, but we could go out and hug our neighbors. Now this thing's happened to all of us, and everybody's affected. And now there's no human touch.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, hey, you okay? Come here. We get through this. Yeah. Now it's just kind of this odd kind of, you're in this limbo of not being able to touch anybody, or it's just so strange, man.
Well, not only that, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, it's like also just like your interaction with like seeing people, like, do I want to breathe that way or have that? Like,
totally.
There's these weird layers that you're just like, what? And then you just, you know, you're having that like internal conversation where you're like, what am I even thinking about now? Why am I thinking like, should I say hi to them? Should I wave? Should I?
Yeah,
like, I know.
Well, next time I see you, Galen, we're kissing. Yeah. That's all I got to say.
A big, sloppy mouth-to-mouth kiss.
Look, he's out of here.
And he's gone.
And he's out. Galen awesome. Gehring, everybody. Thanks, Galen.
Thank you so much, buddy.
Appreciate you, brother.
Well, that's going to do it for this week, friends. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks to Galen for joining us. Thanks to Lightstream for sponsoring this episode. Go to lightstream.com/awesome for more information about their loan consolidation offers. And guys, hope everyone's hanging in there. Be sure to check out all of our offerings on YouTube. We have a new 7 questions every week. We just put out a brand new Phone a Fan. We have our bonus podcast, More Awesome, in video form there as well. And more stuff coming your way very soon. So go to youtube.com and search Stone Cold and the Jackal to see what we're up to. Have a great week, guys. Thank you for everything.
Hello.
Shut your pie hole.
Welcome to Big Demi Energy. I'm your host, Demi Burnett, and I'm so excited to have you joining my podcast. Some things you can expect from this podcast are some juicy gossip, some good advice, some fun, exciting guests, and a lot of other surprises. Surprise! Make sure you subscribe to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Podcast One, wherever you listen to your podcast at.